Thank you, Joyce. I had intended to start with a little quiz, but to do so would be a little bit like the teacher that didn't want his students to fail, and so he said, I'm giving you a quiz, but then writes the answer on the board behind him, her. Because I had planned to ask you what the PMC mission statement is, but then I realized I put it in the focus statement. So, rather than make you all look smart, I'll just ask you to repeat after me our mission statement, to model Jesus. Again, to model Jesus. It's there, not just today in our focus statement, but it's there on our website. If you go to perkaseemennonitechurch.net, no, actually perkmeno.net, there you will see Perkasie Mennonite Church, subtitle, to model Jesus. Now, this mission statement predates me. Some of you likely remember the discussions around this mission statement. I would have loved to have been there, because I can imagine they were interesting discussions. How did you come up with this mission statement? Lots of churches write mission statements. Some write them so long and all-encompassing that everyone forgets them the minute they're ratified and they languish in a file somewhere. Or others have a mission statement that's so catchy and hip that they want to attract all of Jessica's age. And how's that working for them? This simple mission statement packs a lot of weight. You might say it punches hard. You say you want to model Jesus? Really? Are you sure of that? I suppose before you adopted it, you likely had questions and discussions about who is Jesus? We want to model Jesus. How do we understand Jesus around here? Because how you understand Jesus may be different than the person sitting beside you or in the congregation next to you or in another denomination or other Christian tradition. Well, understanding and misunderstanding Jesus has been around a long time. For example, some say that when they're asked about who Jesus is, they say, well, he's the founder of a religion with billions of people as followers, the world's largest religion. And yet, Jesus had no intention of beginning a new religion. He was devoutly Jewish. Some say he was one who, if we believe the right things about him, we then ensure we have a ticket to heaven when we die. But he teaches pretty clearly that he's not so much about the life after this one, but about this life. And he teaches his disciples to pray, your kingdom come on as it is in heaven. Some say Jesus is the superhero who defeats our enemies. And I don't even like to say it, but I will. Makes America great again. But he doesn't take a sword to deliver and oppress people from Roman bondage. He speaks rather of a way of love. So you say you want to model Jesus, but it's important to get clear as we can be anyway, because I don't think we'll ever be totally clear. On this one, we say we want to model. Well, we aren't alone in misunderstanding Jesus. It's right there in our gospel text for this morning. And it's been happening since the day that he was born, which Mark's gospel totally omits, by the way, his birth. But Mark quickly introduces Jesus with these words. The beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Mark immediately doesn't expound on that. He just gets into showing us what Jesus does. He heals, draws huge crowds, teaches, calms the storm, feeds people, creates these crazy expectations. And now, here we are today, in the middle, the smack dab in the middle of Mark's gospel, chapter 8. And we seem to be coming right in the middle of this crossroads. A moment of decision, we might say. And it's the very first time since this opening declaration of Jesus the Christ, it's the first time we hear the word Christ again. Not from Jesus' lips, but from Peter's. It's as though Mark has been spending all this time showing us the work of Jesus. To take these seven chapters to lay out the particular way in which Jesus is the Christ. But here in chapter 8, Jesus turned to his disciples and questions them directly. Well, not quite directly yet, because he has another question before that. He says, who do people say I am? What are you hearing out there in the streets? It's interesting that he asked them this question before he puts the question directly to them. And the disciples report the same things that people today might report. Some say he's a great teacher, a prophet-like figure, a great teacher, a fine, fine teacher, someone who heals people. The options are many. Then Jesus puts it directly to them. And who do you say that I am? Peter blurts it out. You are the Christ, this long-awaited Messiah. Now this text makes plain to note that at that very moment they are in the villages of Caesarea Philippi. Hear the name Caesarea Philippi. In that title, the word Caesar. And they're in the shadow of a temple built by Herod, the puppet of Caesar Augustus, the first emperor of Rome. Why is this significant? Because Caesar is the emperor who had a coin stamped that on it said, Caesar, Son of God. Remember that this is exactly how Mark introduces Jesus. Jesus, Christ, anointed one, Son of God. And the light comes on for Peter. Caesar, Son of God. Jesus, Son of God. There's a fight about to happen. Something's got to give. The real Son of God is about to be revealed, and we want in on it, Peter says. Peter's all in. You see, he and Jesus' disciples and all Jews before him, for that matter, were expecting and waiting for someone to come and wage the great apocalyptic fight against the evil empire, Romans. They were wishing and hoping for this decisive military victory that would rid them of their enemies once and for all. Now it's about to happen. Jesus the Christ will use all the power at his disposal, the power that he's demonstrated already, power over the wind and the waves, and once and for all throw out those so-and-so Romans who are oppressing us. But it doesn't go so well for Peter. It's maybe the right answer, but it's clear that Jesus believes that Peter has no idea what he just said. Jesus begins to work with Peter's profound answer. It's as though this then elicits more teaching from Jesus, because he says some really confusing things about himself. That he, the Messiah, is one to be betrayed, suffer, die, and be resurrected. And Peter's having none of that. Mm-mm. No. This cannot happen to you, Jesus. How can you, being the long-awaited miracle worker, compassionate Messiah, be at the same time one who will be betrayed and suffer and die? And then the rebuke comes right back to Peter. It's as though Peter's idea and Jesus' idea are diametrically opposed. Jesus just turned the world of his disciples upside down. He flipped the script, so to speak. No, we are not marching to the temple of Caesar to overthrow Caesar. We have a bigger mission, a bigger mission of nonviolent love. And yet what Jesus then goes on to say may even be more astounding to his disciple. Right there, after making that confusing statement about himself and his future, Jesus may be making an even more disturbing statement. All who want to come after me, to model me, must say no to themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. It's so important. I just love Mark's gospel. So important it is that Mark repeats it three times here in chapter 8, again in chapter 9, which we'll look at in more depth next Sunday, and in chapter 10. The most revolutionary and misunderstood teaching of all Jesus' teachings. Right there in the shadow of the temple of Herod and Caesar, the symbols of power, domination, conquest, and violence, Jesus says, this is not who I am. This is a crossroads. You can follow Caesar's ways, but it's not the Jesus way. It's not how true deliverance is coming about. What will you do? Who will you model? Caesar and Caesar's ways, or Jesus and Jesus' ways? To follow, to model Jesus is to take up a cross of our own, to let go of self-centered grasping, all will to power and domination, all the ways of Caesar, and to suffer for the sake of light and love and peace, not to seek out suffering. God forbid, there's enough suffering already in our world. but the way of love and nonviolence, standing up to injustice, often and usually, I should say, leads down the road of suffering love. Jesus is saying, there is a way that is a way that down deep below the superficial way that seems to be driven by might and by violence and by getting things done, stockpiling the most weapons of war, making this the most feared fighting country in the world, belittling and destroying those who would oppose you, under that superficial nonsense is a deeper way, is the way driven by love, by humility, by grace, by generosity. On the surface, these things may appear weak and fragile, but they are not weak. They are strong. They are the strongest thing that, as we live into this way, which might mean that we suffer, but it also means that we rise. All of the grasping, all the domination will result in losing your life, losing your way. But by losing your way, by letting go of the way of Caesar, you find a way, you find the way, this way of humility, of love, of justice, and you will save your life. This is the great mystery, is that in saving our lives, we lose it, but in losing our lives and giving our lives away in peace toward others, we find and we save it. The way of Caesar or the way of Jesus, the suffering servant? Jesus invites us to turn away from our over-focus saving ourselves and turn toward our neighbors, even toward our enemies, in love and generosity. Theologians have sometimes talked about sin as curling in on ourselves, curling in on oneself. And I think it could also be said curling in on any institutions, be they a denomination, a conference, a country, a race. This curling in is the antithesis of opening up, of unfurling. And this, I think, helps us understand this idea of losing our lives and saving our lives. Are we living for ourselves, trying to save ourselves? Then we're curved inward like an empty fist. If we're living for each other, if we're living for neighbor, for love of the other, we experience God's love and mercy. We're curved outward toward the world, opening, unfurling, like these beautiful flowers in front of us. And think how much stronger, think how much more powerful, flexible, capable, and beautiful is an open hand rather than a clenched fist. Well, the bottom line for the disciples is that, no, they don't understand, but they follow. They follow. And Jesus loves them. And here we are today reading these words from Mark's gospel, and it feels so relevant. We are following. We are doing our best to model Jesus. Our understanding of how that is continues to and will continue to evolve. But remember the open hand rather than the closed fist. I didn't say it, but I love our mission statement. And I know that you take it seriously as you seek to model Jesus. Let's continue to encourage one another as we address the challenges of our day and continue to see opportunities to model Jesus, to be unfurled to our community and our world. So in my 16 years as your pastor, I've seen many examples of the ways you've modeled Jesus to me personally. Your love for pastors, and Jessica, I think, could say this as well, and your willingness to step into leadership positions has been such a gift to me and to her. And I hope that I've always pointed the way to the Jesus that we see modeled in the Gospels, who loves, who includes, who speaks truth to power, who refuses the way of Caesar, who suffers and dies and rises again. And I hope I've modeled for you, and when I have not, I have felt that you've forgiven me. For that, I'm very grateful. And you, dear people, by your alternative community of love, inclusion, peace, and justice, you model Jesus. By the way you care for each other, you model Jesus. By your witness to peace, justice, and inclusion, you model Jesus. We have stood together in front of the offices of power, the temples of Caesar, and have sung songs of faith and love. You've been willing to take stands for justice, for love of Jesus. And instead of fearing the immigrant, you have welcomed her into your lives, into our community of faith and her children. You've opened your hands, your hearts, and your wallets for the sake of Christ. It's unfurled, and I love it. But make no mistake, it would be a big mistake to pretend that we know all there is to know about how to model Jesus. We humbly open ourselves to learn and continue to learn, even in surprising ways and from surprising people. Let's walk this way humbly, with gentleness toward those who might oppose us. And I know that you will continue to grow as a community of grace, joy, and peace, so that God's healing and hope flow through you to the world. Amen.